Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Time for a Gentleman's World update. To follow my cadence, I actually have recorded a lot of material for Gentleman's World that I've purposely not posted because, as I said, I wanted to do a lesser cadence on Gentleman's World versus other podcasts that I'm working. But some recent events have inspired me to create another one, and then I'll have to delay the other releases. But this one, I think, stands out. So, if you understand what multi-factor authentication is, and chances are you do, because chances are one of your services, likely your bank, has imposed it upon you. And I thought it was important for me to speak on what I, as a technologist myself, what I take away from multi-factor authentication, because in my mind, it is the poster child for how a good idea can be implemented stupid. And by implementing it stupid, we are exposing people to the very risks that are causing people's identities to be stolen. You've seen where credit bureaus are getting data breached and all this. And I want to talk about how, just in general, when we have a great idea, we implement it stupid and why that is. First, some background. The concept of multi-factor authentication is, in security terms, saying it's something you know, something you have, and that we should be able to combine these two factors in order to help secure people's whatever, whether it's a bank account, whether it's a crypto account, whether it's, you know, a lot of these tools are doing it for everything because they're afraid of getting hacked. And the truth is they're going to get hacked regardless of the multi-factor. But when we talk about something you know, in the past, what that used to be was your password. You would create a password. It has to be a certain number of characters. It has to have alphanumerics. It needs to have some special characters or not. It has to be a certain length or not. Some of them have started doing spaces so you can support phrases, which are more secure. And for whatever reason, this wasn't enough. And many of these companies realized that a lot of people are just setting, you know, password one or somebody's name, the name of their kid, the name of their dog, because they're afraid that they won't memorize the password. This is especially true when you deal with a service that you don't access on a regular basis. So then password managers become a thing. The password manager is the best way to bridge not having to remember that password versus using it on the sites that need it. However, in order for most password managers to themselves be secure, they require a password to access the vault so that you can fill it in for your favorite site. So you still have the same problem. You have people who don't create complex passwords because they're too hard to remember, they're too hard to use. Sites, by and large, still use passwords. What we're now seeing a migration towards, which I like, is login via email, where it gives you what's called a magic link, quote unquote, and the magic link has a session built into it so that when you hit the link, it automatically logs you in because it already knows that, or it assumes anyway, that you're the only one that has access to your email, and thus it's arguably the most secure way of letting somebody in, because now what they're doing is they're passing off the security to the perimeter. I've always been an advocate for perimeter security. If you have a, let's say, Outlook account or Google account or others, they're subjecting you to some of the highest level of security these days. They're requiring two factors in almost every situation. Your password has to be pretty darn complex. I believe Google supports the phrase passwords. So there's all of this layer of security that is already built into your email provider that helps keep your email safe, and your email is less likely to be hacked because nobody is looking at it. So it's kind of security by obscurity. But because of the layers that they've already put in front of it, if you receive an email, you can reasonably trust that that person is the only person who can access it and thus access the link. That is still not a widespread thing. I would like to see it become a widespread thing because I think it is a great way to simplify this process. Substack, that I use for my podcasts, use Magic Link. I think it's awesome. But today, the vast majority are still on the older methods of authenticating, and they're still dealing with passwords. But they're fighting with the fact that people can't remember the password or the password's too simple and they get cracked. Plus, technology is getting more advanced to hack passwords that are minimum certain length characters. Then you also have the issue of different sites have different standards for passwords. I'm dealing with this now and it drives me nuts. this site wants 8 characters, this one wants 12, this one supports special, this one does not, this one doesn't let you capitalize the first letter, this one does, this one doesn't let you use any common words, even if it's like all, A-L-L. So they're imposing all these different standards for the password, which just makes it harder for people to adopt it. Okay, fast forward a little bit more, and now they're saying, well, let's consider something else. Why don't we have them create something that they would know? So let's say a cash password or something else. So like I think Cash App uses this concept, but KuCoin uses it, Gate.io uses it. It's basically a PIN. And with the PIN, in conjunction with your email and in conjunction with another factor, it creates the security. The thing is, you're still required to log in with a password in the front. So it doesn't really add any, they're just adding layers of security. And I'll talk about that in a second. With multi-factor, they said, hey, everybody's got a phone, even though it's not true, number one. And two, even if they do have phones, not everybody has a cell phone. And number three, even if they do have a cell phone, not everybody gets text messages on the cell phone. And number four, not everybody wants to. And number five, sometimes you're not in you know, range of internet for whatever reason. But we've made an assumption, everybody's got a cell phone, and everybody's got internet, and everybody's got this. And all these assumptions lock out the people that don't have these things or don't want them. Because frankly, having a phone is a choice, surely, but having a cell phone is a more expensive choice than having a regular phone. Having a regular phone today, you can get one for $5 a month today. I can promise you. In some cases, free, but you're still going to pay the fees and the fines. But having a regular phone is dirt cheaper than a cell phone. Cell phones are there to rip you off, just like with cable. They're there to charge you the most possible. You're saying, well, get a prepaid. Most of the prepaids are blocked because of the way that the services have built it. They want you to have an address. They want you to have a way to find you physically to violate your privacy. And so in most of the way, the developers, the way they build this is to purposely discriminate against anything that is not a cell phone that has a bill, a monthly bill. You know, most of those services are charging you a minimum of $30 a month, and chances are it's going to be higher than that. Like Verizon, for example, I think the lowest it started was like $60 at one point. Yes, you could go get on T-Mobile, but then in certain areas, T-Mobile is garbage. I remember in Oregon, it was worthless, useless. And in parts of Nevada, it's useless. You're really talking Verizon for the best signal possible, and Verizon is the most expensive. Sprint, nobody even cares about anymore. So now you're forced to do a plan, do a credit check, violate your privacy, all just so that you can log into this service. I believe it was 2016, might have been a little bit earlier this. The government, there's a org called the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They are the ones who describe, define, and present different standards for different technologies that they expect the different companies to adhere to, and they present guidance as to when to so-called deprecate certain technologies, meaning we should work towards getting away from these because we've identified XYZ. So your wireless, which is 802.11, and it started with B, and then it went to G, and then it went to C and A, and so on. That standard came from NIST. Your standards for how you log into things is NIST, and they kind of manage, and it's basically a group or a committee of people who are trying to work in what's the most convenient but also the most secure ways of using our different technologies. Every time a new technology standard comes out, it's going through NIST in some form. They do a study. They find what people had already been saying long before this, which is that the text message standard was never built to be secure. And I mentioned before that encryption became a thing. Let's encrypt everything. There's no reason not to. We should scramble traffic to help stop interceptions. SMS was never built to be encrypted traffic. SMS was never built to be secure traffic. And when you're using voice over IP technologies to power that SMS, the problem is voice over IP, although it is a secure conduit, the way that they send SMS messages over is not secured and is actually less secure even than on a phone. At least with the phone, you'd have to spoof the phone in order to intercept it. With voice over IP, the layer that it transmits SMS messages is as easy to transmit as an unencrypted web call, which anybody who's used tools like Fiddler will understand how simple that is. So they released a document saying we should move away from this SMS-based two-factor authentication because it's not secure. There are other tools now that make it much more, number one, they're easier. Number two, they're more secure to protect that user's account. That was released years ago, and the vast majority of companies are still forcing the text message authentication. Companies like Google and Microsoft will do a push. So you'll install their authenticator. So Microsoft has their own, Google has their own, and then you add the account to that auth. And what happens is they send a push notification that just says approve, and then it may ask you to, authenticate or something else just to verify it's you. And then it goes through. There's no code to intercept, and you can't intercept the push signal because it's a push. So theirs are vastly more secure than the text message method. Even if you do the what's called TOTP, which is that your device has an application on it that synchronizes with the time and a factor that's on their server, and then it generates a unique code and it changes every 60 seconds or so. That TOTP process, which is Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator, Authy, LastPass Authenticator, and so on, is vastly more secure than the SMS because there's no data being transmitted. So there's no way to know when you set up that code because it synchronized the time. That means that nobody can ever guess what that code is. They'd have to hack inside the service. And even then, you only have one half of the conversation. So that's vastly more secure. Most companies have not moved to TOTP, and that's a problem. In multi-factor now, if you present a choice to the user, look, if you want the text message because you prefer it, that's fine. I believe they should give a warning. This is an unsecure method. We highly recommend using this Google Authenticator or other authenticator to make some recommendations, but still let them proceed, but it's a choice that they make. What I'm never a supporter fan of is companies that force that upon you, that say you have to set up SMS or you just can't use our service. There are banks that do that now. What makes it worse is when they do a setup, because here's the other problem with SMS. You do the setup. In cell phone land, we don't expect our cell phone number to change. However, something could happen where things go down or we can't access something, or let's say the phone gets lost, which means a SIM card's lost. You can go to the store and you can get a new one and get it all set up, but that takes time. It's a process. It's not instant. Meanwhile, you're locked out of your bank stuff and you can't get access to what you need. You're like, well, if you did the Google Auth, it's the same problem. The difference is that they don't know what that tool's for. They don't know what the code's going to. They don't know what the account is. They don't know the login. They don't know the password. They don't know your email. So because they are missing significant amounts of information, they can't get access to things. If they have your phone, they could just charge the bad boy up, make a call to that service. It's called social engineering. Pretend that they're you and then reset your passwords and accounts. That's why the phone-based stuff is really not the ideal. I don't mind the call simply because everybody has a regular phone. I'm talking about, your desk phone is not going to get stolen. And even if it did, they can't use it because they have to be in your house. Do you see what I'm saying? That there's an inherent security to a landline that is not there with a cell phone, because a cell phone can be lost, damaged, stolen, or anything else. The SIM might go out. You don't have internet because you're traveling. Something could go wrong. And we shouldn't force a reliance on it because of all the uncertainty around it. People will counter it, say, what you're describing is the outlier exception. I disagree. People drop their, and I don't know how, but people drop their phones in the toilet all the time. People's phones get dropped and cracked all the time. People's phones get stolen all the time. These things happen all the time. I just had a situation where I had, again, a bank where they forced the SMS. They wouldn't take my primary number, which is a number that is safe from all that garbage. They wouldn't accept it. So I had to give them a different number that was technically a temporary number. Well, it turned out that that number had some issues, and because of that, I lost it. So then I have a different number now, and I've had that one for a while, but that one has the same risk of being lost because I'm not going to be paying $30, $40-something dollars every single month. I refuse. And it doesn't matter why it gets lost. The point is, the number is at risk of not being held versus my main number, which will never be lost. This one is at risk. So I want to use my main number. If I'm forced to do it, it doesn't have a bill. It doesn't have an address. It doesn't have any of the privacy violating things to it, but it takes text messages. It's essentially a mobile number. Most of them refuse to accept it because they want to see if they fail the verification, they do it manually. They want to see a bill, paper bill. I can't give them a bill. There is no bill because there is no charge. It's free. But it accepts text messages. They just don't take it. So I have a backup number whose sole purpose in life is if it's a critical service I have to do and they're forcing me to do that stuff, then I can give them that number. But again, in this bank's case, they don't let you change the number once you put it in there. So if something happens to the number and I can't reaccess it for whatever reason, now, boom, I'm locked out and I can't get in and I can't reach them because, as you know, during the pandemic, customer service, they're slammed. They're getting tons of calls because they can't transact or whatever's going wrong. You finally get to somebody 2 hours later and then this person doesn't know what you're talking about. So you have to escalate it. You have to call legal and do all this stuff. It took me at least a month to finally get them to change the number, and talking to six different people. This is BBB. They ignored them. I eventually had to get Congress involved because there was no, you can't block somebody from doing transactions, and their developers blocking your ability to make self changes is a joke as a developer myself. But that's exactly my point of the problem inherent with forcing one course of action. See, I'm not against the text message for other people that prefer it. I'm saying it should not be forced. I'm saying it should be a choice. I'm also saying we should warn people. This is an unsecure method of doing this, and we don't recommend it. We recommend setting up Google Authenticator on your phone to do it that way, or do the automated voice call. If you have a landline, we understand not everybody has a mobile, so if you don't have one, we can do it this way. In worst case, you don't have to even set it up if you don't want. So don't even force two-factor. Maybe somebody don't want it. I don't know. On the crypto side, they kind of have to, because if they have significant amounts of people losing money, it's just going to cause smoke from the government coming down with regulations, and that's the reason why Binance ran away. So I kind of understand it there, but certain of the cryptos don't do it correctly in my mind. Like KuCoin did it perfectly. They gave you a choice. You set up the Google Auth, and you're off and running. Gate.io gave you the choice. You set up the Auth, and then you're off and running. But then other ones literally just force it and impose it upon you. They don't care. Like Gemini, nope, you got to have a mobile phone because everybody's got a mobile phone. You got to do it or you can't move forward. It's anti-consumer. I think it's anti-disability act, frankly, and it's not the right course of action. So I'm not saying we should not have multi-factor. I believe in multi-factor. I think it's the right tool. I think we're misusing it. I think we're implementing it wrong. I think we're strong-handing it because we don't understand. And then when there are guidance principles released that contradict what we knew at the time, we're not shifting fast enough away from unsecure standards to the secure standards. Yes, I understand that requires development resources, but guess what? You'd have those anyway. So I'd rather we get smarter about, right now we should not be doing this SMS authentication anymore. We really shouldn't be. It's deprecated. Can you still use it? Sure. But you should be working to move away from it because it is no longer a supported method of doing multi-factor. And if you consider that the push method is available, it's an open API. You can do TOTP with the Google Authenticator and others. That's available. It's an open API. It doesn't take that much to implement it. I've done it myself, and I wouldn't consider myself a high-level developer by any means. These are available to you, and that's what we should be moving towards and moving away from as a priority, the text message. Now, I'll close with this. I say all this, and what I'm seeing now from different services is they're prioritizing login with Facebook, login with Google, login with LinkedIn, login with whatever, instead of properly building a security standard and a security portal of their own and managing the security themselves. They're just pawning it off to these different providers. I'm not sure people are paying attention. Facebook's been hacked before. I don't know why you do that. Login with Microsoft might make sense if there's a Microsoft integration for the tool, because let's say, for example, one of my invoice providers is integrated with Microsoft, so there it makes sense to log in with Microsoft, but not like Discord, Discus, D-I-S-Q-U-S. Discus prefers you log in with Facebook. Why? None of the data, there's no integration between the two. It's a different communication platform. So use your own authentication, which you can. I'm just saying they prefer you log in with Facebook, and that drives me nuts. All of these companies that are rushing towards log in with something else so that we don't have to worry about it, instead of coding the proper standard on your own and just making changes when you need to. Building your frameworks to where you can make those changes quickly And I'm not even talking general agile. I'm talking that within your development, you build the ability, you think about, this might change. When I do this, Okta. If I, my company decides to move away from Okta, we're screwed if I've built it so hard locked in there that I can't easily, you know, decouple the security model. So why not build it containerized to where you can easily remove Okta, plug in the new one, and you're done in a fraction of the time it would take if you just raw coded it. As, and I'm just picking on Okta as an example of another security model where the tendency is just, oh, let's go this way because everybody's doing it. And they're not taking the time to think about, what if this is no longer the answer in the future? We should build it to make it easy to get out of it. We should build it to make it easy to move away from it. With multi-factor, it's the same thing. Chances are a lot of these have built it so tight with the SMS that now they don't want to spend the money to move away from it. And the net effect is that the customer is left vulnerable. And I don't think that's acceptable, nor will I ever support it. It's part of the reason that I openly responded on LinkedIn saying, I'm no longer doing the rat race, because I'm the kind of person that will come into a company. And if I see you doing things that I know for a fact, as a former auditor myself, mind you, that this is not the right answer and we need to go a different way and here's why, and I can point you to the documents that tell us we should do this, most companies don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that from somebody like myself because of whatever their bias is. You know, we're a tool's been working fine for years. That's cool, but I'm not going to be working in those cultures because that means that when you get breached, you're not going to come back and give me my credit and say, you know what, we should have listened to you. You told us this was going to happen. We're listening now. You're in charge of the next project to get us on the right track. How, tell us how we need to be successful and what we need to do to move forward, which is what we used to do back in like the 80s and the 70s. We don't do that now. Now we ignore the people trying to warn us that something is coming. When something crashes and burns, we actually blame our people internally, and we don't own that. And that's an ego thing that's, it's all over the place, and it's sad. And with multi-factor in particular, the customer is the one that's left vulnerable, not the company. It's the customer. And I don't think that should be acceptable. I will never support it. And I'm on record saying, I would love to help any company, I don't care who it is, any company who listens to this and wants to hear more about what I'm saying and why this makes sense. And I'll even help you with suggestions on how you can implement a strong security model up front. I can't say unhackable because that's impossible, but I'll sell you on a highly secure front-end security model. And it'll be convenient for the users to the point that your users will actually love to log in. I am happy to share that conversation with anybody who wants to smoke. If you're open-minded and you're not the our stuff works mindset, and you're willing to listen to somebody else who's trying to help not only yourself but myself, I would love to have the conversation. If you're willing to commit to the conversation and have an open mind about why what you're doing is not the right answer, so that we can all move together in a better secure model, that means you're going to need to spend some money because there's development, but you're investing in a better secure model, and that should be the priority. Is doing things that benefit your customers, not just your bottom line.